The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. Excuse me. So let's hope I'm doing everything correctly here on the recording end and that you can still hear me. Yes, you can still hear me. Great. So I'm Maria Strotman in for Don today. And what I would like to do is begin by reading you a poem by a Zen priest named Hogan Bays. He runs a Zen center in Oregon. So this is the poem, and it's called In This Passing Moment. In the presence of Sangha, in the light of Dharma, in oneness with Buddha, may my path to complete enlightenment benefit everyone. In this passing moment, karma ripens and all things come to be. I vow to choose what is. If there is cost, I choose to pay. If there is need, I choose to give. If there is pain, I choose to feel. If there is sorrow, I choose to grieve. When burning, I choose heat. When calm, I choose peace. When starving, I choose hunger. When happy, I choose joy. Whom I encounter, I choose to meet. What I shoulder, I choose to bear. When it is my death, I choose to die. Where this takes me, I choose to go. Being with what is, I respond to what is. This life is as real as a dream. The one who knows it cannot be found. And truth is not a thing. Therefore, I vow to choose this Dharma entrance gate. May all Buddhas and wise ones help me live this vow. Now, you may have noticed all of this series of things is, when I encounter this, I choose this. This is a complete expression of non-judgmental awareness. I meet this moment, just this moment. It may or may not be what I want. It may or may not be what I expect. This moment, I choose this moment. I choose what shows up. It is an intention, it's a statement of intention. I choose what shows up without an opinion, whether I like it or not. I choose this moment. This moment. What shows up here? That, you know, this morning, I've recently been away for a couple of weeks, and I forgot that the last time I was on Zoom, that the microphone in my computer wasn't working. And so it wasn't until I signed on with somebody else, with, you know, the IMC Zoom identity and was setting everything up, and I tested the microphone and I went, oh my God, I forgot the microphone's not working. And I'm frantically trying to figure out how to make things work. And it's 3 minutes before, you know, I should be online so that everybody can sign in. And panic sets in. And I'm thinking, okay, this is how it is. And thoughts of despair arise. And oh my God, I'm not going to be able to go online. And then I'm thinking, of course I can go online. It will not be ideal, but I will be online. I choose to be online. It's a very simple thing, this, okay, I didn't choose what happened, but I can choose what is. I can choose what is. Here it is. Okay, this is what we're going to do now. You know, I've recently read a column by Albert Brooks, who is actually a Christian, conservative Christian, which is not usually where you might find me, but I find this man a really careful thinker. He's an occasional columnist for the New York Times, but he routinely wrote and was actually an executive director for a conservative think tank. But he wrote an article about the real purpose of religion. And he said one of the most effective things about any spiritual practice, not religion, but any spiritual practice, is it should form in you a sense of resilience. And I thought, oh, this is good. This is good. This ability to just show up. Just show up. And keep showing up with all of your intentions. How do we do that? How do we do that? You know, I recently read an article about blueberries. Do you know that blueberries contain no blue pigment? They're actually not blue. They're not blue. How can that possibly be? I mean, you look at a blueberry, it's blue, right? Well, it turns out that they have a coating around them. And I love the name of this coating. It's called a waxy epicuticular coating, known as bloom. And it is nanostructures in the surface that reflect light that make you think it's blue. It's an energetically inexpensive way for something to be blue. The pigments in a blueberry are actually red, which you see if you smash it in against a white sink, it runs red. Blueberries are red. They have red pigment. But because they have this surface coating that with a nanostructure that reflects light in a certain way, we think they're blue. We perceive them as blue. Now, how is this relevant? Well, I'm fascinated by the fact that blueberries are not blue, because very often we make judgments about what's going on in our lives based on things that really have to do with the nanostructure of how things are reflected around our views, our biases, our beliefs, our preconceived notions, how it has always been, how I think of myself. Well, this is my habit. Well, I'm a person who, sort of like my rejecting Albert Brooks because he's a very conservative Christian, when in fact I totally admire the man. One of the great pieces of wisdom in Buddhist thought has to do with the aggregates, which describe the ways not only that we define ourselves, but really talk about all of the pieces that we define as experience, which is how we define ourselves in the end. And those aggregates are the ways that we take in information and what we do with the information. Okay, so the aggregates are the physical thing. So, you know, this is hard and it's transparent and it's round. And the physical things about this, there's the physical reality of experiencing this item. And then there is the feeling tone, the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling tone, Vedana, which is what I really want to talk about. So pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, all experiences are pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. You know, I like the shape of this glass. Some things I like about the shape of this glass. Yeah, there are lots of opinions around that. But basically, it's pleasant. I can hold it in my hand. And then there's the naming function, perception. This is a glass. Now, why is it a glass? It's a glass because it holds something. And we name it a glass. So there's a naming function. So there's naming in our experiences. This is walking. This is standing. This is a glass. This is a blouse. Naming. Okay, so we have the physical aspect. The feeling tone is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. The naming, perception, we name it as something. Then there is the mental formations. Okay, this is kind of like a glass. I like this glass. This is what I start thinking about the glass. I have opinions about the glass. It's Well, it could be more clear. Actually, I don't like the fact that it's quite this tall and the lip is in this tight. Well, it's kind of pleasing because it's not too thin and it's not too thick. All of the opinions that you have about things, this is mental formations. I wish I had more of these glasses. I wish I had less of these glasses. All mental formations. All the opinions, the wanting and not wanting. The liking and not liking is actually in mental formations. It's not in feeling tone. It's in mental formations. And the fifth item is awareness. When this glass was sitting over here, it didn't even exist. As an experience, it was nothing. As me, it was nothing. Until I was aware of that glass, it was nothing. So something in our experience that we're not aware of, it could be there, and we're just not aware of it. Because we're used to looking at things a certain way, a narrow way, we don't even know this is what's happening. We can't even see this is what's happening. So now I want to go back and talk about Vedana, the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. We're often given the instructions in Buddhist circles to be with it, be with the feeling, whatever it is. You know, I'm angry. How do I be with anger? I'm sad. How do I be with sadness? And somehow this instruction to be with it makes us think like we have to defend that, whatever that is, which entails telling stories, which of course takes you off into mental formations and doesn't have anything to do with feeling tone. Something can be pleasant or unpleasant, and you don't have to roll around in it or tolerate it or any of those other opinion-laced ideas that we have around feeling tone. Pleasant or unpleasant? Pleasant or unpleasant? So I'm going to give you what I hope will be a more concrete example of what I mean by this. So the trip that I just went on was to another state, a road trip to another state, where we held a memorial for my stepmother who just passed away. And I was the officiant for this memorial. And I have a lot of siblings. I have still 7 living siblings and all of their families. And if you have any siblings at all, you know, there are long-standing relationships and we're all in our 70s. Well, not all of us now, because there's a lot of us, but 60s and 70s. And that's a lifetime of forming opinions, relationships, memories, hurts. And in high emotional times, this stuff comes up. And so I found myself walking a gentle road through all of this. And I was amazed at things that would come up in me and think, oh, and the tendency to want to judge, why are you thinking those things? And judge them, why are they doing those things? And why are they saying those things that just aren't true? Now, memories can be a very tricky world. And I got home after all of this turmoil and I woke up in the morning and I realized there was something wrong. And I finally realized it was anger. I was angry, which is a really horrible feeling, anger. It tightens you and it's a very negative feeling in your heart. And it closes around you and I thought, oh. And so I realized what's anger. And now the tendency is to want to justify that anger by saying, well, this is the reason I'm angry. And then you start telling the stories and listing all the possible reasons you could be angry, right? And I watched those thoughts arising and I thought, no, it's just anger. But I really don't want to be angry because I don't like angry. I don't. So there was this a discomfort with anger. I said, okay, so anger is here. It's just here. So I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to write down my thoughts about it. I'm not going to figure out who or what I'm angry about. And I am not anger. It's simply here. It's here. I'm not going to push it away or pretend it's not here. And it's also, because it's not me, it's not the only thing that's happening here. And as soon as I was able to say, I'm not going to have an opinion about that anger. I'm not going to be dismissive of it, and I'm not going to try to push it away, and I'm not going to say it's my fault or not my fault. I'm just going to allow it to be there. I had a moment of, just a moment. And that allowed me to look outside and say, oh, isn't it pretty out there today? I think I'll feed the hummingbirds. Still, the anger was still there. Didn't go away. But it wasn't the only thing happening. I did not have to become that anger in order to deal with it or be with it. And of course it went away because I didn't feed it. I didn't push it away. It also allowed me in that moment where I said, to feel that what was true is that I was hurting. And even that, was I hurting because of some injury, hurting because of grief, hurting because I had been protecting myself and now I was feeling? Any of these things are possible. And from a psychological point of view, maybe you'd like to, behavioral point of view, you'd like to understand all of that. But from a Buddhist be here now point of view, it was just realizing anger is only one thing that's here. There's also a different kind of hurt. Both of these are unpleasant, by the way. But I would not wish either of them away for not being here and alive and feeling and truly here as I am, just me here. This is why it's so important to recognize the difference between wanting and not wanting, and pleasant and unpleasant. Pleasant and unpleasant can be present at the same time, but not embraced at the same time. not defended or explained or all of the ways in which we become entangled. To see pleasant and unpleasant is to see the root of where we go to, I want or I don't want, I crave or I have aversion toward. It is the seeing clearly part that allows us to be with it, to be in it, just to see it just as it is and not try to make it something else. Not to try to get control of it, not to try to put it in a box, not try to hold on to it, not try to encapsulate it. All the things that are natural human tendencies, by the way. But simply to just, so that we do not become a passing emotion, but that we can see it coming and going. Now, this is not automatic. It takes practice. It takes practice to say, I don't have to explain that to myself. I don't have to justify that. I don't have to defend myself, and I don't have to be better than I am. But I have to see clearly that this is the, what was that word? cuticular reflection of light and not the actual pigment. I have to see that anger is present, but what is even closer is there's pain here. Notice there is pain here that needs to be seen and not deflected away in something like anger. Not because I'm being more generous in not striking out, but because I'm being more true to this is how it is. So that if pain is here, I choose the pain. I can be with this just as it is. I can see it just as it is. And truly embrace impermanence because I see it there and I see it leave. Or I at least see the absence of it later. This is what the seeing now. So I'm going to close with a poem by from the Tarigatitha, the Verses of the Elder Nuns. This is very old. This is Rohini, Wandering Star. You don't become the cloth just because you put on robes. You don't turn into empty space just because you carry a bowl. The sun doesn't bow down. Trees don't grow flowers at your feet. Birds don't start answering your call. The path will hold even the biggest mistakes. The path will make room for even your deepest regrets. But you don't become the cloth of the robe overnight. It can begin very quietly, something you barely even notice, like the touch of water on your skin, like a knife in a drawer, like the next 5 minutes, unless they are the last. The path is not a line on a map. It is a great shining world. Enter wherever you like. You might get thrown back once or twice. But if you push through the outer layers, oh, my sisters, then you will know the true welcome that is the very essence of the path. The path is not a line on the map. It's a great shouting world. Enter wherever you like. You can drop off the wheel of samsara anywhere. Begin with saying, this is unpleasant, but I don't have to have an opinion about it. This is pleasant, but I don't have to have an opinion about it. Begin anywhere. Begin anywhere. It works. Then you will know the true welcome that is the very essence of the path. So those are my thoughts this morning. We're now, thank you. If you have any thoughts or questions, I'd be happy to entertain them. Clarifications? Mary?
I would just appreciate it if you could put your volume a bit louder.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't. I'll be louder.
Yeah.
I'm going to fix it before I get on Zoom next time. I'm going to call Apple and say, what's wrong? I'm going to shake them by their lapels.
Yeah. What you have said this morning really applies to what's going on in my life now. And knowing how to deal with it, I'm in the last part of my aging process, and it is extremely challenging. So thank you. Thank you.
It is extremely challenging, Mary. And you're still here.
I have a question on this theme. The sort of linking what you were saying to emptiness and identity. Mm-hmm. I was recently in a breakup room in a sangha meeting, and we were discussing emptiness and identity. And a lady, quite upset because she sort of said, when you focus on the teachings of non-self and this idea of not seeing color. So I was using an example, not seeing color, for instance, that in the sense that I can be in this sangha, not ever notice that I'm a different color from someone else. I'm the same as everyone here. And she brought up the example that for the longest time she suffered with Dharma teaching, non-self, of seeing ourselves as equal. Nonsense and this thing that I was sharing, because she was a closet homosexual for a long time in a marriage, and she was stuck between what her identity was, wasn't, whether she can come out, whether she can be truthful, what it meant for her marriage, hurting her partner for 30 years. And we didn't have enough time to delve deeper, but I also felt that it was nicest to just stay quiet and allow that pain and hurt that she was still feeling with regards to the teaching herself. But I wondered, you know, how does one respond if you do have 2 hours, you're in a state of sangha, to sort of explore that? For me, what arose later on or has arisen is that it's about Vedana and then mental formations, and or the pain is not in the equation or the non-self. The pain is in just, there's a situation, like I've been cut by I've cut myself with a knife, and I'm criticizing myself for being so careless. And equally, you know, someone is saying, well, don't be, you know, let's put a bandage around it. I'm not trying to belittle it. I just struggle a little bit with this idea that the self and the emptiness cannot be explored in that context.
Ah,
yeah, more freely.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a perfect place to explore it. And I think it's a very a difficult arena. So I can say, for one thing, I went through a large part of my life trying to ignore race, color, in order to treat everyone with what I hope was the same value judgment. And it was later that I came to understand that to a person of color, that was just another way of being dismissed, which came as a shock to me. It was so different than my intention, but like the blueberry, I was just wrong. I was just wrong. And I set out to deliberately pay attention. It's two weeks of very intensive. I was going to notice everybody's race and try to figure out not only what this person is black, but this person is from Trinidad, you know, just really try to really appreciate the differences that people were bringing to their existence, because that is how they show up to themselves. And to appreciate that to constantly have the feedback that I won't see that in you is a constant rejection, and how painful that must be. By the same token, I would wish for them that that would not be so important to them, that their experiences in life would be so positive that it wouldn't be necessary to defend themselves in that way. Unfortunately, this is how it is, and there is a need to defend. So I allow for both things, for all things to be there. I allow for my short-sightedness in how I was approaching trying to be respectful of everyone, and that it was in fact not being respectful of everyone despite my intentions. I honor the people who struggle with how to show up without having to defend themselves, how painful that is, and how that anger can pickle you inside. I've also known that personally in myself, specific kinds of anger, that which is why I find anger such a horrible feeling, that it took me so long to work through my own resident anger. So I appreciate that that exists for people. And being free of that takes a great deal of work. There's an absolutely wonderful book called, let's see, hold on a minute. I actually was looking at it yesterday, so I'm hoping I can turn it up here. The Path in the Way of Tenderness is written by Earthlyn Emanuel. And she is a Zen priest. She's actually doing a day long at Spirit Rock the end of the month. And she is a Black lesbian woman who was consumed with anger. And she found her path to be along how to be with that anger. So it addresses exactly this very notion, this very problem, this very fraught area. So it's a book I would recommend to anyone, A Path of Tenderness, that addresses these very issues. She herself is she's a woman that you want to just hold in your arms and have in your life, because she's done so much work around this very, very notion. So those are my thoughts. Thank you for bringing that up.
Would you please repeat the name of the book and author?
I'm going to try to do something here. Yes. Okay. Oh, great. I have my keypad.
And is it available on Amazon?
It is available on Amazon. Hold on just a minute. Okay. I'm going to do the magic thing. I hope, share my screen with you, and you will see the cover of the book. Do you see it?
There it is.
There it is. Earthlyn Emanuel, The Way of Tenderness. Awakening Through Race, Sexuality, and Gender. For anyone who wants to open their heart to others, this book holds the key, is a quote by Lodra Winsler down at the bottom. So I highly recommend this book. I'm not quite sure why I have another Zoom going up here, but okay. And now I'm going to try to unshare so that we can come back together, okay?
You know, I'm finding a very strange thing. I don't know if it's my computer or what, but while I'm talking, there's a deep echo in the thing I said. And whenever people talk, there's a delayed echo too. So is it me or what?
I'll tell you honestly, I think it's because I'm using my iPhone as the audio And so you're hearing both my iPhone and I don't know how to fix that. I apologize.
Actually, you're not echoing, Maria. Everyone else is.
I still think it has to do with my iPhone, though.
I'm sure it does.
I'm really sorry about that.
Okay, so I have to check my computer.
It's not you. It's not you. It's me. But I don't.
Maybe if you mute your iPhone while we're talking.
No, if I mute my iPhone, I could try that. No, if I mute my iPhone, it worked. You can't hear anything.
Well, yes, well, I can hear you, but it's still echoing. Yeah.
Sorry. Maybe what I need to do is turn off the sound on my computer. Now, somebody speak. Is that better?
Let's test it. Hey, that did it.
That's great, only I can't hear good. You.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can't use two devices. Zoom doesn't like it. I don't know why they even give you the option, except we wouldn't have had this at all if we didn't have that option. So,
yeah. Well, hearing something twice is not a bad thing.
So let's see. There are a couple of things down here in chat. So I think they were leaving, but okay. So does anyone else have any comments? No.
I just accidentally saw you on schedule for today. Do you do this every week?
No, I don't. I'm sitting in for Don this week.
So,
I am going to be teaching in the place of Diana this month, I think in May, a couple of nights in May, Monday nights. So they're coming. I can't tell you the exact dates right now because I'm still trying to catch up, having been out of town. But that should be on the calendar. This also was not on the calendar. So that, let's see, maybe I can look it up.
So are you still listed on the individual, meeting that, whatever it's called, where we have to sign up?
Yes, I am. The individual practice discussions and the group practice discussions. Yes, I am.
Okay.
So I'm teaching on the 6th and the 20th for Diana. Okay. All right. So I think we're coming to an end on this. So I apologize for the technical difficulties and I resolve to resolve them. And I wish you all the sense of ease that comes with just being here with things as they are, pleasant or unpleasant. And of course, I wish you more of the pleasant, just because it's pleasant.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your wisdom. Thank you so much.
Bye, all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. I really enjoyed those. Thank you.
Good. Good to see you too, Michael. I've thought about Oklahoma this week. My parents both came from Oklahoma. I was born in Oklahoma.
We should talk about that sometime.
Yeah. Bye-bye.